Welcome to the BBB National Programs Podcast, The Bistro, where we will discuss today's hottest consumer trends, predict the future with consumer experts, and learn how elite businesses and entrepreneurs continue to push the envelope to meet and shape the consumer's needs in the marketplace.
Hello and welcome to the Bistro Podcast. I'm your host, Elena Spinola. As we move into a new decade, we're excited to explore topics of innovative technology, their uses and implications in the marketplace, and the impact on consumers and the overall economy. Today, we're going to talk about one of the most dynamic growth sectors in aviation, and that is the emerging drone industry. With the market expected to reach around $13 billion U.S. dollars by 2025, this industry is on the rise. And as we move forward in integrating this technology further into our society, drone laws and regulations are also evolving. Joining us today on the Bistro are two very distinguished experts, including Matt Scassero and Miriam McNabb. Matt Scassero is a director of the University of Maryland Unmanned Aircraft Systems Test Site, which does research into drone technology, applications, and regulations. Matt, welcome.
Good to be here. Thank you, Lynn.
We're very happy to have you. And Miriam McNabb is the editor-in-chief of a commercial drone news publication called DroneLife.com and the CEO of Job for Drones, an online platform for licensed drone pilots. Miriam, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, guys, this is such an incredible time for drones, of course. The aviation industry overall is growing at exponential rates. We've got new emerging trends, and they're all going to require partnerships between the aviation industry, governments, and communities in order for expansion and growth and this modernization to take place. Let's kick off this conversation with just an overview of some of the emerging trends in the different segments of the industry. Can we start there?
Sure. So I'll kick off. Thanks, Elaine. So the great thing for us is that the drones, it's the entire system, the unmanned aircraft system. So it's the aircraft, it's the ground control stations, the sensors, the data links, but it's also the people and the software and the algorithms. So you're actually bringing together so many different areas than traditional aviation has brought together. So it's really an opportunity because you're not reliant on, and I'll say this with some risk, the same old approach. You have all these different communities that can bring in their perspectives and what they have to offer. And it really gives us an opportunity to do things differently, not just in the physical structure of the aircraft and the systems, but how we think about them and how we actually approach the challenges and the issues. So much so to even think about multi-domain. It's not just about aviation. It's how aviation ties in with the ground, the water, the surface, and even space. How do you tie all these things together synergistically to create more opportunities and have better outcomes?
Very good. What about you, Miriam? What do you have to add here?
Well, I think that, Matt's exactly right, that there's so many aspects to this new industry. But if you think about it from a practical point of view, and this really speaks to one of Matt's achievements here, but this is allowing aircraft to do things in a less expensive, more accessible way. They can do them faster. They can do them sort of with less impact on the environment. So what you used to be able to do only with a helicopter, you can now do in a way that can be implemented more quickly, less expensively, with more flexibility. So I think in the medical field, and there's just so much potential. One of Matt's recent things, which I'm sure we'll get to, is the organ transplant and delivery, therefore. But I think that there are so many applications opening up with this new technology.
Sure. And it's for all of these reasons that you're both describing that this drone industry is growing at such an exponential rate across several different market sectors, as you mentioned, also from defense and then the commercial market and the consumer market, of course. Miriam, you mentioned the medical aspect of it. Last week on the Better Series podcast, we had a really great discussion on the business side of the drone industry, and the medical drone services was a really hot topic. So you brought it up, Miriam. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Sure. Well, I will. I'll start it off and then, pass it off to Matt. But the medical drone industry is, I think, one of the first ways that communities are really going to see the benefits of drone delivery. So drone delivery is a hot topic. People talk about, is Amazon going to be delivering my stuff by drone, or am I going to get fast food or burritos delivered by drone?
We can hope.
And those are all potential applications. But I think the first place that we're going to see deliveries done by drone is in the medical applications. And there are a lot of reasons for that, but drones can fly as the crow flies. They can get there really very, very quickly with low impact. And in a lot of medical applications where speed is of the essence, and that's, you know, organ transplants or delivering cardiac defib equipment, where the difference of 1 minute can really make a huge difference to the outcome. Having those things delivered by drone has so much benefit for communities, and I think that's the first place that communities are really going to see drone delivery happening.
Yeah, Miriam really hit it on the head that it has such an opportunity for impact, and it makes it so easy for people to say yes when we're asking for exemptions and waivers to flight authorities, whether here in the United States or overseas. When you're saying it's to save lives, it's to help people receive better medical care, health care, it makes it really easy for them to say yes. When we did our kidney delivery in the city of Baltimore, it's an urban environment. It's not risk-free. So we obviously did everything on our side, to technology-wise and procedures-wise, to do everything as safe as we could. But there's still some risk represented there. It was very easy when we said, we're going to deliver an organ. This is the first time in history this is being done by a drone to a patient. And you have the opportunity to be first in a city that really focuses on biohealth and biomed type of applications. They jumped at it. They said, we're going to get to yes. Let's figure it out. It took us a while to do that. Bringing in the city and the hospitals, the technology, the research, FAA, everybody. But everybody really wanted to get to yes. And you see it around the world, because a company like Zipline in Africa today, Rwanda, and a couple other locations they're at, they started a couple years ago wanting to do it in the United States, but the regulations really weren't ready. So they decided to go overseas. In sub-Saharan Africa, the leading cause of death is women in childbirth, hemorrhaging and infections. Easily treatable if you have the right stuff at the right time.
Sure.
Zipline in Africa today, in Rwanda, they're delivering over 30% of all blood and medical supplies by drone. And they're literally saving thousands of lives every year just by that very simple application of drones. And it's expanding rapidly. We're looking to fly in Zambia next year to move HIV samples, again, to get them there fast enough to be able to test. So the medical use, it makes economic sense, it makes operational sense, but it makes human sense as well.
Absolutely. And the amount of lives that you just mentioned that can be saved from this, and then also just things like search and rescue as well, mm-hmm. right? Being able to quickly identify where people are and save those lives also. Many believe that deploying drones for these public safety reasons will be the key to consumers accepting drones more yeah. mainstream. Would you guys both agree to that?
Absolutely.
You go ahead,
Mary. Absolutely. Yeah, I think that Matt, made an excellent point when he said it's easier to get to yes. And, you know, I've talked all around the world about drone delivery. And when you talk to people about whether or not you want a drone swooping over your house, to deliver a burrito or something, people often say no. But if you say, well, what if the six-year-old kid right next door just got stung by a bee and you're trying to get him an EpiPen? You know, people feel immediately different about that. And with public safety applications like search and rescue, there's so much benefit for both public safety professionals, for law enforcement and firefighters, and for communities with drone use. So if you think about it from the law enforcement side, if you have the capability to see that there is an armed person right around the back of that dumpster or whatever before you go into a situation, that's an incredible benefit. But you also have the opportunity to see if it's an unarmed person and you need to handle the situation differently. I mean, there's just so much benefit to both communities and to public safety officials that I think that's also an easy way to get to yes, and that sector is certainly growing fast.
Yeah, certainly these substantial opportunities for enhanced patient care and cost savings and life savings, as you mentioned, an easy way to get yeses from regulations and things like this to say, yes, we can move forward with this. We mentioned a little bit about some consumer concerns. Do I want these flying over my house? Let's talk a little bit about that, because, you know, the use of drones in the United States, as you both know, this is not exactly new. For years, they've been widely used in the military. They've been used for commercial purposes in the construction industry. But heading into this new era where the use of drones will intersect perhaps more frequently with consumers and communities all over America, what are some of the concerns made by the general public? Are they valid? And then we'll talk about maybe solutions for that.
Sure. The initial one we really ran up against was just an image problem, because back when the drones were really starting to come on in the civil commercial sector, besides the military sector, it was in the mid-aughts, and there was a lot of things going on overseas with drones, the drone strikes, and things. So we had an image problem. And then initially, nobody wanted to use the D word, drones, and everybody had to be UAS and UAVs and things like that. I think we've kind of gotten past that just because we've done so many good things with drones, and they've become a toy for so many people and recreational use, things like that. So I think we've gotten over that image problem here in the United States. Overseas, we still have to take that into account, especially in areas of the Middle East and Asia, places like that, Southwest Asia. So the image problem is being worked on. But the big things here in the United States, I think, are really in the current environment are two things, safety and privacy. The safety of drones, the best thing we can do is to do it right, have the right procedures, and be open and transparent with what we're doing. It's critical that we get people involved in those public conversations of what we're going to be doing, how we're doing it, what is the discipline and robust systems we're bringing over from manned aviation, what are we taking advantage of with unmanned aircraft that make it better and safer. And that's really what the FAA looks for. So they're deeply involved in that. And then the privacy side, again, it's an open public conversation. Is there things in place to protect them right now? Yes, Fourth Amendment, privacy laws, anti-harassment laws, things like that. It's how you apply them to this new technology, just like any new technology. You have to figure it out as you go a little bit. The real, I think, concern is more of a future concern, and that really gets into machine learning and AI, artificial intelligence. That is not a real concern right now because nobody's really paying attention to it in the general public. That is going to be an issue in the future because that's when you really take advantage of unmanned systems, the efficiencies of unmanned systems. And there are a whole lot of issues with the ethics of artificial intelligence, things like that. But that's
sure.
A future concern.
Yeah, future concern. Hopefully, you know, we'll see how we fly by. This time flies by so fast, right? So it's like a future concern, but with the rate at which technology is increasing,
tomorrow's here.
Tomorrow, this concern, but all such great points. And, you know, we had discussed, Miriam, at some point, we had discussed the idea that consumers have some misperceptions. Can you share some of those facts about those misperceptions that they have with drones?
Sure. I think people do have a lot of misperceptions about the issue of privacy and spying, you know, as kind of something of a public figure. I have my email address is very public, and I get a lot of emails of people sort of expressing their concerns over privacy and drones. And I think that there's a lot of misinformation, first about kind of what drones might be doing mm-hmm. in your area. So if you see a drone in your area, it's not necessarily looking at you. It could very well be performing some perfectly legitimate commercial application on the construction site, you know,
sure.
two blocks over. That, you know, cameras are often used for navigation. They're not all trying to spy. And I think that a lot of these concerns really can be sort of dealt with as people become more familiar and aware of the technology. I think, you know, we not only have a perception problem, we have an awareness problem. It's most people are not aware of the commercial legitimate applications that might be going on in their neighborhood. So they just see a drone and they sort of get nervous about what is it doing there.
Sure.
But I think additionally, you know, we're kind of in a gap here. When cell phones first came out, when smartphones first came out, there was a lot of media and a lot of public perception issues, and people were concerned that people would be filming them while they were on the subway, and people would be posting things, and their images would somehow become very public. And of course, you know, there are risks associated with people having smartphones everywhere you go, but those smartphones are so beneficial that people naturally accept the risks associated with them. And I think we're just in this sort of gap with drone technology where the drone technology has not become yet widespread enough so that people recognize the major benefits that they can provide.
Sure.
So that risk-benefit analysis isn't there yet.
Absolutely. And, you know, as Matt said, it's important to have these public conversations because we all fear what we don't know. As you said, when cell phones first came out, we didn't know what they can do. And now you can't find a single person who does not have their cell phone. In fact, they will freak out if they lose their cell phone for 1 second. So despite the initial concerns about privacy and things like that, of course, we've readily accepted them, as you said. And then another concern is, what if they fall out of the sky? What if they hit me? What if they land in my car? Or, you know, if I'm on an airplane flying, you know, what if there's a drone there? What about the certifications there? I mean, tell us about that.
So the certification, the great thing is the processes already exist, but they're designed around manned aviation. So the FAA, as much as people can throw rocks at them about being slow and we're behind, but we actually have a lot of respect. Our test site has a great relationship with the FAA because they have processes in place. You have to follow the processes. And their biggest thing is they're basing everything around safety case. Just like you said, they have to do the analysis of what the actual risk is versus what you think it might be. Do the actual analysis and say, here's how what the risk is actually compiled of and how are you going to mitigate it, eliminate it, things like that. So those are the things that we have in place already. We just have to learn to use them. We've had our first two Part 135 certifications, which are commercial airlines. They're package delivery. UPS and Wing got those first two Part 135s. So the great thing is we have a robust system in place, but we have to figure out how can we adapt it, streamline it, maybe make changes that are only applicable to unmanned systems so that we can really make it applicable to this new industry, not hold it back, but help it get regulated the right way so that we can actually start using it and running with it as fast as we can.
Absolutely. Let's talk about those regulations here because, of course, as drone services become more mainstream, the regulations will continue to evolve and really give us great insights about how drones will impact our lives. So who is involved in drone regulation now? Or maybe who isn't but should be? You know, are there things that aren't regulated that should be? Or what's the situation right now with drone regulation?
So right now, officially, the only drone regulations that are out there are Part 107, which is small drones below 55 pounds within visual line of sight below 400 feet, some other limits there, daytime. You can get waivers to just about anything to do an operation, but you have to, again, show that safety case analysis. So that's kind of the state of regulations. Everything else you do has to be by exemption, by waiver, to go bigger, faster, further, anything like that. The folks that are involved in it are pretty much the right folks. Obviously, the FAA is involved, DHS is involved, FCC is involved from the spectrum aspects of things, Department of Justice is involved from the law enforcement, privacy protection, things like that. But on the non-governmental side, you have industry involved in a major way. The only concern that some of us have had is that, as in any industry, some parts of industry have attempted to buy the regulations, to set up the regulations that benefit them the most, to the point where some of the companies suggested, give us 400 feet below, we're good. We'll just take 400 feet and below, you keep everything above that, we'll stay below that, we're all happy. Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot of manned aviation that operates under 400 feet, especially around airports.
Sure.
Takeoff and landing, but helicopters, everybody else. So we have to really be aware of who is pushing for what and why and make sure it makes sense for everybody, not just for that one particular segment. The ones that really aren't involved, to my experience, is the community. The general public isn't as involved as they really could be and actually should be because their viewpoint is going to be critical to the trust factor. And that, you talk to anybody about unmanned systems, AI, anything like that, the biggest hurdle we have is that trust factor. So the community has to be part of building that.
Sure. Miriam, what
I think for people outside of the industry, it is really important for them to understand that drones are considered an aircraft, so they are regulated by the FAA. So in the same way that a Boeing plane is regulated by the FAA, drones are also regulated by the FAA, that is the agency that controls what they can and can't do. You know, there are so many aspects of regulation going on right now, and there are a number of advisory groups out there. And I agree with Matt. It would be more interesting if we could argue about things and not agree with each other.
Let's find some.
but I agree with Matt that you know, the community does need to be brought in, partly to help them understand what people are trying to do with these drone applications and to say, yes, well, that would be valuable to the community, or no, that's not really. And there are efforts to bring community into the process by doing state-level programs and innovation projects where more people can be exposed to those, but probably enough. The other thing that I would like to see more of is, frankly, more sort of global cooperation, because there are a lot of multinational companies interested in this technology. While you're never going to get a global standard for anything, it would be nice if we had a global understanding of what level of risk is acceptable and so forth, in the same way that we do in the manned aviation industry. You know, planes can take off from Boston and land in London, and everybody's got the same understanding of what's an acceptable process and risk there.
Yeah, Miriam brings up a great point. The international piece, a lot of times in aviation, EASA and the European Civil Aviation Authorities really look to the United States to lead and see what the FAA is doing. The FAA, rightfully or wrongly, has slow-rolled some things in the past with drones and drone regulation. So Europe has pushed out in some areas. And so there is a good discussion going on between EASA and FAA about where things could go. So it's actually kind of nice seeing this, a little bit of competition now to see who's really going to take the lead in some areas and who's looking over whose shoulder to be that leadership voice in
sure.
this regulation area.
Yeah, well, competition usually does spark more innovation and pushes things forward. And as we talk about moving forward, let's talk about some of the opportunities for diverse minds in this field. Miriam, you're a woman in the drone field. Are there many other women in the drone field? And let's talk about that.
Sure. So I used to joke about this. You know, many conferences have a Women in Drones event. And in the first ones, you know, many years ago, I would joke, you know, yeah, all five of us get together for lunch. and that's actually sort of not, it's definitely not that way anymore. They're packed. They're hard to get into. There's lots and lots of women joining this industry. Unfortunately, you know, lots and lots of women is still putting us at a very, very, very small percentage, as is the case in manned aviation and many other STEM careers. So, but I do think that the drone industry is wonderful in some respects because it is so new, it is so innovative, it is so edge case that I do think most of the players are really interested in getting more women, more people from diverse backgrounds in to be part of the conversation and part of the development you know, of these products. So it's a great space for women to enter. I think that everybody that I have encountered, from very large companies to small startups, is looking for a diverse workforce. Mm-hmm. It can be hard to find, as with many careers in aviation and other STEM people. You know, we have to start girls earlier.
Sure, absolutely. Well, you have certainly been a pioneer as an early woman in the drone field. And Matt, can you just kind of, as we wrap up here, just talk about why diversity is so vital to this industry and how does being diverse in this industry impact all of us?
Yeah, as I mentioned at the outset, there are so many different fields that are coming together at the nexus of this thing called unmanned aviation. And then again, in the future with the machine learning and artificial intelligence, it's not just aerodynamics and propulsion electronics. It's software and algorithms and all the applications that can come together. So we actually, it's not nice to have it. It's we got to have. We have to have a really diverse approach to this, and all different kinds of diversity really need to be brought together. The onus is really on those of us who are already in the industry that are in positions where we're able to make impacts on how we hire, the job descriptions. One of the things I did at my own test site, because I was really having trouble attracting candidates that were diverse, I went in and rewrote all the job descriptions with that in mind to make sure that we weren't asking for this one specific person that has the skills already. It's already been there, done that. We want to give opportunities to people that may have those skills and may be able to develop in the way that we need to go with unmanned aircraft, not where we've been, but where we're going. So I think there's opportunity on both sides, but it's really a requirement. We have to get that diversity in there to get the best solutions, because this is just such a fast-moving industry. And as you said, it's going to pick up speed more and more. We just got to keep up and actually lead it.
Absolutely.
One thing thing that I do want to point out is that while the women in the industry are few in number, there are some women taking really top positions at some of these large companies. You know, there's a woman at the head of Skyward Verizon, which is one of the main companies. There's a woman at the head of In-Situ, which is a large U.S.-based drone manufacturer. There are women at the top levels of many organizations. There's a major drone company, Precision Hawk, that has, you know, 13 board seats and six of them filled by women, so there really are some major efforts to open up the industry to diverse perspectives and to hire people. Women out there who are interested should keep that in mind.
Absolutely. I think you both make a very strong case for both of that. And it's great to hear that there's so many women and also diverse new young minds coming to the table in this very fast moving, emerging industry. So Matt and Miriam, thank you so much for being here today and for taking the time to speak with us. Can you guys share your websites with us so our listeners can go ahead and dive in and learn more about the information we talked about here today? Matt?
Sure. The University of Maryland UAS test site, our website is uas-test.umd.edu. And it's easily Googleable, University of Maryland UAS.
Yep. And we are dronelife.com.
DroneLife.com. Matt and Miriam, thank you both so much for sharing today.
Thanks for having me.
To our listeners, we want to thank you for tuning in. We invite you to be part of this conversation by sharing your thoughts and reviews with us. Just go to www.betterbusiness.blueberry.com. And if you haven't already, subscribe to the Bistro to see our list and hear more great podcast episodes. For BBB National Programs, I'm Elena Spinola. And until next time, it has been my pleasure discussing better business and the future of drones with you.
You just enjoyed the Bistro podcast. Be sure to tune in next time for a brand new episode. To learn more about our other shows, visit betterbusiness.blueberry.com. That's betterbusiness.blueberry.com. Follow us on Twitter at @BBB_NTL programs. Send your comments and ideas to podcast@BBBNP.org. The thoughts and opinions expressed on this podcast are the views and opinions of the guests, not those of the BBB National Programs or its affiliates. This podcast is for information and educational purposes only and is copyrighted with all rights reserved. This podcast is protected by Blueberry's Terms of Service.